Accession number 30249, Reel 6.
You have a problem and you're not quite sure how to solve it, then you start to look and find people who've, you know, had the same sort of problems, you know. And there are so many war artists, I'm dumbfounded how many there were, you know. We don't seem to have so many these days. I'm not sure. I never meet war artists. You know, you don't run into one on your travels, that's for sure. I mean, I think they're probably pretty thin on the ground, really. Well, you can tell me more than most whether they are or not, but I, you know, they seem to be a fairly rare breed anyway.
I think you know from your own experience the increased dangers now.
Mm. Yes.
Going into
and the
war zones.
The unpredictability, that of modern warfare, and that's probably something that wasn't there so much in the Second World War, for instance. I mean, the fact that modern warfare is about terrorism and quick strikes in and out and roadside bombs, and that is, you know, you never know where the enemy is anymore, and that's quite frightening.
Yes. You think of your warrior, you know, very secure in Kosovo, but look what's happened to them in Iraq.
Yes, that's right, they've been blown to pieces. Yes, I mean, yes, that sort of terrorism, that sort of warfare has become very sophisticated. So there's a whole set of problems now. And I know, again, which I'll touch on later, but the unpredictability is the frightening aspect now. I'm still quite happy to waltz into situations on a patrol if I know what we're going into. But walking down a street and not knowing if the person coming towards you is a suicide bomber, that's quite frightening. Very frightening.
Yes, I suppose when we go into Afghanistan and Iraq, that will become a feature of your...
Very much so. Yes, very much so.
Yes.
Yeah.
So your output from Kosovo, from, you know, did you have an exhibition from this or...
Yes, I did. I had, I produced the one major piece that was required for 3 Commando Brigade, but again, I produced probably 30 or 40 pieces.
Well, what was your big piece? Would this have been the 5 actions in one that you were asked to do?
Yes. I was trying to show all aspects of a deployment, really, from the sort of humanitarian side. To the sort of war fighting side. I mean, that just in itself is quite technically, it's quite difficult to put together so many images on one sort of sheet of paper, you know, getting them to work together takes quite a lot of planning. I usually plan each sort of piece separately, and then I on a separate piece of paper, and then I put all the bits of paper together and I move them around and see if anything gels, you know. So, yeah, cut and paste, exactly. Yeah, it's very practical stuff. And then you make little adjustments, but little by little you get something worked out, you know. But that's quite laborious and not a lot of fun, really.
It was a big one, was it?
Yes, it was a large... It was a watercolour, but it was a very big watercolour.
And was it well received?
Yes, it was, yes. And it hangs... That particular piece hangs in the officer's mess in Stonehouse Barracks in Plymouth. I saw it down there a couple of weeks ago. An old friend. I mean, sometimes I'm horrified at... when I look at work that I did 10 years ago, you know, I think, you know, I should be shot for that. But this piece still works. It's still, it looks okay, you know. But I move on as well, you know, and hopefully my skill develops. And sometimes I look back and in horror at what I've produced.
But the other output from Kosovo, were you able to... have other exhibitions?
Yes, I've had... I mean, at that stage, I'd accumulated a lot of work anyway. So several galleries wanted to show my war work So I did several shows and sold several pieces, well, more than several pieces, to the general public.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Isn't that different, do you think? is there a difficulty with selling war art if it isn't commissioned or specific to a buyer?
Yes, it is. There is a great difficulty. I mean, most of my war work is not drawing room stuff. It's not pretty. but some people, because it's on the news all the time and it's part, everybody's now has got a friend who's got a son who's away somewhere fighting, so everybody's very familiar with all the imagery and the stories, and that has generated a relatively new market, actually. I mean, I have people with no military connections buying pieces of my war work just because they want a piece of it, and that's quite interesting. I've not quite worked out why this should be, but I kid myself, it's the quality of the painting sometimes, but it's the subject matter. There's something people admire what our young people do. They really, you know, I mean, people are quite very proud of what our young soldiers, sailors, airmen are doing, and I think they express it sometimes by buying a piece, you know, of my work or another painter's work.
Do you think also that the coverage that is given by TV and films, that sort of seeps in?
Yeah, it does. It does. My only grouse is, I think a lot of people suddenly see, without realising it, they see war as some sort of entertainment, and that has worried me a bit, because when we went into Iraq, for instance, we had what seemed to be 24-hour-a-day coverage, and it's like watching a computer game, and it's all jolly good fun to see people scampering around and being shot at and shooting back, and it does become entertainment, and that is really quite worrying. And the media, they overdo it a bit, you know. I mean, it can look quite glamorous at times and very exciting, and I mean, I do try with my work to show that it's far from glamorous. It may be exciting of a sort, but it's far from glamorous. It's a bloody business. It's ghastly. So if I do a war show, I accompany it with explanations, so every picture has an explanation. And I generally give talks as well and just explain to people what's going on, because it's portrayed in this way, and people react as though it's a game. People get very blasé about it as a consequence, and probably don't question politicians enough about it, because, you know, everybody worries about it when we go to war. They worry for the first fortnight, and then everybody forgets that we're, you know, and it's only when we get an announcement that we've lost another two soldiers in Helmand province, or, you know, we've lost a warrior in Basra, and then a few people shudder, and then we go back to, you know, normal. And the politicians seem to forget as well, you know, that we have a war. We have a war. We have two wars going on. But it's, nobody seems to worry too much anymore. Very sad, you know. So part of my job is to make sure people are still aware of it. Anyway, that rounds off the Kosovo thing, probably, doesn't it?
Yes, are you fit enough to now go on to, and after Kosovo, were you ready for more? You know,
well, I wasn't ready for more.
More pain.
Well, I came home from Kosovo. I flew into, for some reason, I flew into Newcastle on the way back from Pristina. And as I live near Portsmouth, so my wife drove up to Newcastle to meet me, greeted me when I got off the plane, and she didn't actually greet me, hello, I miss you, it's nice to have you back. What she said was, the Dutch Marines have been on the phone. Anyway, the Dutch Marines wanted to speak to me, so I came home, got on the phone the next morning, and I spoke to my friendly colonel, except he was now a major general. And he said, I'm not sure if I should tell you where we are, but you'll need to bring lots of yellow. Dutch humour again. They were in Eritrea and Ethiopia, and they'd only just gone in, but they'd already decided that they wanted an artist, and would I like to go along? So I went from I don't know, minus 10 in Pristina to 45 Celsius in Eritrea within the space of 7 days, because I came home, unpacked, washed all my kit, packed and went.
Have you got an understanding wife?
Well, yeah, I guess so. she does take the view that, well, if you want to do it, do it. And she never ever lets on that she's worried, and that's good. All my family are very matter of fact about it. My children have sort of grown up with me being an artist for a start, and all the problems, you know, no regular income and all that sort of thing, and the place strewn with pictures, you know. So turning into a war artist was just, you know, well, you know, that's what he does, so that's what he does. So nobody makes a great fuss about it, which is lovely. They do occasionally ask me, you know, if I had a good time or, you know, but we don't generally talk about it. You know, it's at the end of the day, it's a job. You know, it's a job like any other job, to be honest. There's nothing that special about it. And that's why I like my kids to be, you know, matter of fact. Anyway, the trip to Eritrea, the Eritreans and the Ethiopians were engaged in a border dispute which had turned very bad. They seem to have been fighting on and off for years and years. And this particular war had got exceptionally bloody, and the UN decided that something needed to be done about it. There had been one particular battle that had really sort of triggered this off, I think, and they decided that we needed some troops in. So the Canadians went in and the Dutch went in. Dutch Marines went in. I suppose their first plan was to try and get between these two fighting armies and separate them, and therefore stop the fighting.
So there would be a peacekeeping?
Yes. Yeah.
Peacekeeping?
Yeah, blue helmet job. Yeah. And they'd done a good job. I got there and the actual fighting had stopped, but both sides were manoeuvring and trying to outmaneuver the other, and, you know, there were Eritrean tank columns going places, and the whole thing was in a state of flux. Anyway, they took me in and decided, as usual, they'd just show me everything and see what I could make of it. So they flew me all over the highlands. I mean, the battle was being fought in the highlands that separate the two countries, so it's quite high, mountainous, a bit like Arizona, really. Beautiful, beautiful country, just breathtaking again. I don't know why the wars are always, in most of the wars, anyway, not all, but most of the wars seem to be in such fantastic country. So yes, we turned around. I had a I had a Dutch major who was at that stage in his career was like their visitor's officer, and he was stuck with me for 2 weeks, but we hit it off straight away, and he took me around. Could I just answer the phone? Gordon Rushmore. Our first port of call was a real shock for me. The reason the Dutch were there, one of the reasons, was that there had been this huge battle, and the Eritrean army had tried to attack an escarpment over a 10-kilometer front right along the border with Eritrea, and the Ethiopian general had pushed his army up this rock escarpment and kept pushing them for 7 days, and in 7 days they lost an estimated 60,000 soldiers in this assault. I arrived just as the poor Dutch were trying to do a body count, and this was my welcome to Eritrea. And I was told that I could go and sort of have a look, but I wasn't to take a camera and I wasn't to take a sketch, but I wasn't to record any of it. So I went and had a look. And that experience stayed with me, and I decided I must do something with what I'd experienced. So I painted a large piece when I got home, that was straight from memory, but showed Dutch Marines counting bodies, basically rotting bodies, and I. As usual, I just did it for myself, but I put it in an exhibition at the Dutch Marines Museum in Rotterdam, and at the private view, a Dutch Marine came up to me, and he slapped me on the back, and he said, "That's a damn good painting, I can smell it all over again." And so I knew I'd done the job properly. That was a real compliment, you know. He knew exactly what I was getting at.
Yes, that must have been a shock for you. That was the result of a massacre.
Yeah, but it turned into a massacre. The Eritreans had were defending this ridge and ran out of ammunition on the third day, I think, and were using rocks and sticks to beat these people off. And it was their country, you know, and I can't comment, you know. I mean, I generally don't comment on conflicts to, you know, who's right or who's wrong, you know. But it was a vicious business, you know.
How did you cope with that, you know, going to a scene like that?
Oh, well,
it's really like some of the ancient battlegrounds.
Yes, yes. I was fine. I mean, to be honest, you don't see an awful lot after a week or two in those sort of temperatures, you know. I mean, no, I
coped. Bodies had decomposed.
Yeah, yes, yeah, very quickly. And you've got birds of prey and animals, and you know, all. It's. I coped fine. I mean, the Dutch had a padre there in case anybody needed to talk. But they seemed to be coping pretty well. I mean, I didn't see anybody distressed. Quite matter of fact about it. They get on and do the job, and most of our people do. They don't. They just get on and do what they're asked or what they're told.
It's very interesting. It suddenly struck me while you were talking, you know, that you were with the Dutch and earlier with the Dutch. The Dutch experienced Srebrenica, didn't they?
Yes.
And their reputation.
Yes. Yes, it did. I mean, I don't know all the details about that, but I mean, they weren't given the support they needed. I think that's probably the crunch. But yes, they've been scarred by it. That's for sure. You know, and they learnt a lot of lessons from that. You know,
was it ever mentioned to you by any of your Dutch friends?
In passing, but not directly. No, but lessons were learnt. You know, but I have to say the Dutch. If you want something done, you know, the Dutch are there, the Brits are there, and the Dutch are there. Dirty jobs, we're in there, you know, doing it. I have a lot of time for the Dutch forces, and Dutch generally. They're lovely people. They're really wonderful people. But, I got on so well with them that trip, you know. They took me to various outposts. We ran into a column of Eritrean soldiers in one place. We were in a Land Rover, three of us in a Land Rover, and a column of probably 300 or 400 Eritrean fighters came down the road towards us. I held my breath. My major friend got out of the vehicle. I walked straight up to them and talked to them very up front, and there was no problem at all. They all filed past, and some of them said hi and some of them just ignored us. But I did get slightly worried because I thought, if this turns nasty, we haven't got a hope, you know. But it was very exciting. The whole trip was absolutely remarkable, and I saw again so many different facets of war. I mean, the war fighting, the peacekeeping, and for the first time really I saw refugees that I could really sort of say, well, these are refugees. And there were thousands of people living under blue plastic sheets and queuing for UN handouts, you know, and I mean, there were strings of donkeys travelling like 20 kilometres from a village to meet a lorry that was going to give them a bag of maize, you know, and I've not experienced that before.
End of Reel 6, Gordon Rushmer. I keep forgetting your name.